This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. And Jeff Bliss watches the very popular governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who's recovered from his recall success and is now lord of the cash. Lots of cash. A very good evening to you, Jeff. Gavin Newsom is a generous man. He's got a lot to be generous about. How much, Jeff?
Good evening, John. Yeah, he's got a lot in his back pocket, as they say. He's got about $97.5 billion. That's a B with a B, billion, in this year's budgets in terms of surplus. And this is the largest ever. And it is so massive that even he has been kind of taken aback by it. He said that as much publicly that he can't believe how much is there. So there are a lot of people now saying, hey, we want some of that money, not just the taxpayers who it's due back to some of it by law, but other people have got their hand out saying, okay, you've been putting me off. Let's give me some cash.
Now, there are dimensions that the governor has to follow. Explain, Jeff.
That's right. There are a couple things that have to be done when you have a surplus like this under California law. One is about half of it has to go to education. And so what he's saying is $128.3 billion will be allocated to education spending. And this means from transitional kindergarten, otherwise known as preschool or even daycare, on up through high school. That's a record-breaking sum by any accounting. And that works out to be about $22,850 per student. So at a time when people have been poor-mouthing education in California for so long, here's a lot of money. It's hard to imagine people coming back after this if they get all that money saying, we don't spend enough on our students. The other part is there's a certain amount that has to be given back to the taxpayers. There was an act passed in the 70s called the GAN Act, and that declares that a certain amount of money, if there's a surplus, has to be given back to the taxpayers. For instance, in this past year, taxpayers got about $1,600 each, I believe they got from the state. Now, they're going to take another $23 billion from the surplus, put it in the rainy day fund, which is, again, dictated by law, something that happened under Jerry Brown. And that's to help out the state when things are looking down, when the economy's in the dumps. They're also going to ask for about $2.5 billion for housing, $500 million to convert vacant malls and storefronts into homes, which has been a big topic in California now, especially with the homeless. And then they're going to take $3.4 billion and use that to pay down the state employees' retirement debt, which is a nice gesture, but really the state retirement debt is pretty large. And it really doesn't do anything to address the overall unfunded liabilities in California, which I understand could be upwards of $1 trillion.
Jeff, are these all the governor's decisions? I understand with certain restrictions. He says yay or nay to passing out this scale of money?
That's true. So, you know, like I said, about half of it, he has no choice. And another portion of it has to go back to taxpayers. So, you know, these checks are going to have someone's name on it. My guess is it's not going to be a Republican. And it's going to say, hey, you know, here it is from Sacramento's money. So that's going to earn some grace from some folks. And, you know, he's still been struggling with getting money back to people over the gas problem, gas prices. So this will be a nice welcome return once this money gets into people's hands.
The governor's responsibility to return $97 billion to his favorite projects, half of which goes to education. Now, at the same time, you know, California looks like it's doing well, Jeff. Just a few years ago, we were struggling to explain California. People were leaving. Oracle, Hewlett-Packard, Tesla all left. Now, all this cash and this generosity, minimum wage, what's happened?
What's going to happen now with minimum wage is it'll go up to $15.50 per hour. This has been triggered by inflation. So this is part of a six-year-old state law that governs automatic pay raises. So, you know, if you're frying up hamburgers at McDonald's or grilling them or, you know, whatever it is, cleaning houses, you're now going to be getting paid a minimum of $15.50 per hour. Excuse me. So that's, of course, going to drive up prices across the board. It may result in some people being let go because we know that's how a real economy works. But what it's also going to do is it's going to help push some other salaries up. For instance, there are certain union contracts, especially with state and municipal contracts, where it's dependent on what the minimum wage is and what surrounding living wages are. And so that's surely going to have an impact on those contracts and get some union workers some more money.
The homeless industrial complex in Seattle, in Portland, and in all major cities in California. I'm certain they've heard about the $97 billion surplus. Have they got plans for it?
They certainly have their eyes on it. Since that number came out, there's not a single group, not a single NGO or agency or, you know, advocacy group that hasn't started to put its hand out and say, we need some of that money. And of course, the homeless industrial complex is a big part of that. They're asking for a lot, but you've got them centered in every major city, not just the West Coast, but certainly in California. And they're going to be wanting a big chunk of that.
And the homeless in San Francisco, there's a plan to house all the homeless people and to get the tents off the street. Well, it's kind of obvious. It's been a while. They've got to it. Are they ready?
They're, you know, the people in San Francisco are ready. They hit that tipping point that we've talked about for so long. San Francisco being a very liberal, compassionate city, however you want to put it. And they put up with it for quite a while. And matter of fact, helped fund it and encouraged it through their different things they did in the city. But now they've reached that point. They can't do it anymore. You know, in some parts of the town, it's almost become unlivable. It's become unsafe. Conventions don't come there anymore. People don't want to come to work there, never mind the pandemic, just because of the panhandling. So what they did is they've come up with this idea to move the encampments off the streets. And it's not, it goes hand in hand with a lot of other programs that are going on, not the least of which Gavin Newsom's, conservatorship kind of court that's going to go on for homeless people. But they want to move these encampments off the streets. And yet there are opponents, the advocates, the people who are the friends of the homeless, saying, we feel it would encourage encampment sweeps that would clear the streets without advancing longer term options to homelessness. And so, what we're really saying here is, do you want to keep them on the streets or do you want to move them off the streets? The homeless industrial complex benefits greatly by keeping them on the streets. The people of San Francisco are saying that's not helping anybody.
Let me get this straight. San Francisco wants to give them a place to live besides tents along the street. And the people who are helping the homeless say the tents are better than living in a hotel?
Yeah, it defies logic often. It really does. The idea of moving people to a better, cleaner, safer place, it's not just better, cleaner, and safer for the homeless, but for the people in the surrounding neighborhoods and communities. But again, that doesn't, when you're taking that power and that ability of the homeless industrial complex to call the shots, right, they're not happy with it.
We've found a mystery. It's a time machine tunnel. What is the Bay Bridge, Jeff? That's not the Golden Gate.
That's correct. There are two major bridges that everybody thinks about when they think about the Bay Area. One is, of course, the Golden Gate Bridge. That's hard to miss. It's iconic. It's in So Long's You Name It movies. And then there's the Bay Bridge. Now, this was a project that actually was created by Herbert Hoover, of all people. And it spans the east-west run from, say, the Oakland side of the Bay to San Francisco. And it actually crosses an island in the middle or cuts through it called Treasure Island. And, it's been an important bridge for transit, for the military, everything over the years. And over the past decade or so, they created a new portion of the bridge. It needed to be revamped, certainly after the earthquake damage, the Loma Prieta earthquake. And they built a very nice looking, sleek white bridge. We reported on it many times. But what's happened is Urban Explorer found these tunnels that go on the eastern approach of the bridge. And this was something that he did not know about. And most people don't know about in the Bay Area until recently, until he uncovered it. And he found this basically a very pristine corridor that runs from, to the toll plazas and out to the management islands out there. And nobody had been through there. Most people have never been through there, at least in decades. And so now people know about these secret tunnels. I'm sure it's going to bring hordes of people, maybe homeless, maybe graffiti artists, who knows. But it's kind of an interesting remnant from yesteryear when the whole thing was built.
And everybody forgot about it. This tunnel underneath it's underneath the bay as well as the Bay Bridge?
That I'm not sure of. I believe it's actually part of the freeway itself, the corridor that runs out through there.
I see. Under the road.
Yeah. But what's interesting is this urban explorer, as he's called, says there are many other tunnels throughout the Bay Area that people don't know about. And it's going to make it his project to detail or create these maps that show people where these are. So I think this is just the first of many stories like this.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.